Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
At a time when demand for Bitcoin is getting bigger. It's not just regular people, it's also Wall Street firms now buying Bitcoin. Less supply and increased demand often leads to higher prices. It's basic economics. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
The Biden administration moving to restrict drilling and mining in Alaska, finalizing protections within Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students by sharing what works in pre-K through 12 education at edutopia.org.
Here we are, mid-April already. Are you kidding me? And you've joined us here on the Augustana College campus just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Juanice Zarur, Quad City Arts visiting artist. We're going to learn a lot about some very interesting music in the minutes to come. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on Quad Cities Public Radio as we while away the hour, check in on the composer's datebook, and who knows what else. All ahead on Saturday Morning Live, Portions Recorded. Juanice Zarur, I've been so looking forward to this conversation because I've been snooping and listening to some of your music. It's amazing. And as wonderful as it is, I'm glad it wasn't traveling all the way around the world to get here because you just came down I-80 from Chicago.
Exactly. only a three-hour drive and I was here.
Exactly. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. But you are here as part of Quad City Arts, Visiting Artist Residency.
Correct.
It's when we're very, very, I think, rude hosts because we invite you to be a guest in our community and then ask you to make 20 different appearances at local schools and area libraries and other community organizations. It's a grueling schedule. But by now, Saturday, we're getting near to the end. And in a moment, we're going to tell everybody listening how they can hear you tonight. But with that as a little bit of a preface, I'm just very curious. I love music, and I greatly admire the people who not only are good at music and enjoy making music, but who've discerned that as their calling in life. That it's not just, you know, like when I took clarinet, you know, lessons a million years ago. Something along the way told you that this was a calling. So I just wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about how you first became exposed to music and then made that transition to, hey, this is something I can build a life around.
Sure. You know, I started at a very young age because I do come from a musical family. And it basically started as I was jealous from my cousin who was playing piano.
Ah.
At the time, you know, I lived in Ramallah, Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and there was a brand new conservatory that was just starting in 1993, and I just aged myself, of course, if you do the math, and they were a very, very small institution, and the only instrument that was available to learn at the time was violin.
Mm.
I wanted the piano, of course, but there wasn't enough room. Luckily, I was matched up with a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful teacher called Muhammad Fadl, who was one of the just really most wonderful music teachers for young students. And that was kind of the spark that started everything. He was extremely encouraging and just a wonderful person to be around. And from that point forward, as I was learning the violin, my goal in life was to impress Mr. Muhammad Fadl.
Mm.
And I kind of progressed in that kind of arena for a little while, learning the classical, Western classical violin, until I really got into Arabic music, the tradition mm-hmm. of Arabic music. And I started picking up these Middle Eastern instruments and also playing the violin, because violin is actually a very important part of Middle Eastern music. And I started playing the violin in the Arabic kind of tradition, mm-hmm. which is quite different. And it's even a different tuning than what we're used, you know, how Western tuning is. It's more like the fiddle, the American fiddle. It's cross-tuning, et cetera. You just kind of know after a little bit that this is something that you want to do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I was essentially taking my violin everywhere I go, every spot that I go. If I had a sleepover with at my grandma's house, the violin would be with me. Not necessarily to play it, but it just has to be with me all the time. The spark just kind of happened as a result of the environment that I was in. And the wonderful musicians that I was surrounded with. It kept progressing. I got more into composition. My real passion in music is really music arranging and writing. Mm. And just kind of exploring the different sounds and the different textures and what I can do with Middle Eastern music, which is a very melodic kind of tradition. And what I can, how I can kind of use harmony, which doesn't exist really in Middle Eastern music, in Middle Eastern music. So kind of putting this music into a larger kind of instrumentation, more harmonic framework. Mm. And, this has been what I've been doing for most of my life, really.
So, but I want to just make sure I'm clear. When we refer to maqam mm-hmm. music, what does that refer to more specifically?
Well, maqam is the musical system that is used in Middle Eastern music and a lot of the surrounding areas of the Middle East. And it's essentially, the best way to describe it is, it's a system of modes and scales that are quite different from Western music. Because let's say, for those who are listening, imagine a piano keyboard with the black keys and the white keys. Well, in the maqam system, there are sounds, there are pitches that do not exist on the piano. They're kind of in between these cracks. They're the in-between notes, in between the black key and the white key even. So imagine all of these possibilities now with the different, the modality, the different modes that can be played, the different scales that can be played, the different sounds, the different emotions that these invoke, just by the, using these different combinations now of sounds, you have just much more. There are many more colors to explore.
We'll get into your exploration of the areas of convergence between maqam and jazz in just a moment, but I was intrigued by when you talked about the violin and how that can sound very, very different in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think about the difference between, when you even say fiddle, I think of something mm-hmm. very different, or right. klezmer music, right? And
yes.
So my background, we've had, in fact, some artists here at Augustana because it was founded by Swedes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of the nyckelharpa. It's a variation on a violin that they came up with. It literally means a keyed harp or a keyed mm-hmm. string instrument. So it's both the bow and then there are little keys on the side.
Yes.
And it makes for a very different sound. Mm-hmm. And it just the way they took this basic thing, because there are stringed instruments really in every culture, right?
Of course, yes.
Because somebody was wandering along and
exactly.
Yeah, and they banged a string and there it was, right?
Yes.
But you also have some other string instruments that are part of your repertoire that I find very, very fascinating. Would you mind introducing everyone to those?
Sure. So the two main instruments that I play, especially with the East Loop, are one that is called the oud.
Oud?
Oud. And oud is essentially kind of an ancestral instrument to the guitar. Some argue to the piano even. It's the direct ancestor to the medieval European lute. The difference between the oud and the lute, the main difference, is the lute has frets on the fingerboard.
Right.
Just like a guitar.
Yeah.
The oud does not. So we have access to these in-between notes that I was just telling you about.
That's got to be very hard to learn, though. I mean, I think it takes a lot of time, wouldn't it? I mean,
it takes time to get the intonations right. It takes time to know exactly, to develop the muscle memory.
Yeah, right.
And there's a lot of embellishment language that you learn, that you would have to acquire in the other hand, the hand that holds the pick.
Ah.
That is not really, it's a different kind of picking technique than the guitar. It's a very rhythmic instrument. And that's kind of the main Middle Eastern instrument, really, especially in the kind of the Arabic context.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the instrument that's used to accompany. If there was only one instrument to accompany a singer, for example, the likelihood of it being an oud is very, very high.
Gotcha.
The other instrument is called buzuk, which kind of looks like the oud, but it's got this smaller body. Of course, both of these instruments have a bowl in the back. They have kind of they have a round body in the back and just kind of a flat soundboard.
Yeah.
But this one is kind of a smaller bowl, but it has a much longer neck, and it does have frets. But these frets are many more. Again, to have access to these, pitches that are not on a fretted guitar, for example,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these frets are movable. As well, so you can kind of move it around to get the right intonation that you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, and also before we move on, you mentioned Ramallah, and here at Augustana, we had an amazing student. We've long been part of an organization called the Hope Foundation Scholarships, which helps Palestinian youth to come to a place like Augustana and study. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had a student from Ramallah, and her descriptions of the city seemed so vibrant. I mean, just wonderful, rich. You can't turn around without bumping into something that's wonderful and spiritual. And I mean, in the sense of the way music is, right?
It just
changes you somehow.
Well, Ramallah informs my music a lot because Ramallah is, Ramallah, you could spend 5 minutes in Ramallah and for the rest of your life feel nostalgic about it.
Mm.
It's a hilly town.
Mm.
The tapestry is just absolutely amazing. Lots of nature. Very, very busy and very vibrant. Yet, it's also quiet.
Mm.
It's a very artsy town. There's a lot of music going on. There are many, many music institutions and venues, and it's really a warm place.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing, talking about your teacher, is that another one of our students who came, he had actually been displaced and had grown up in a camp for displaced persons in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a teacher who was a physicist. And to hear Abdul Rahman was the student's name, mm-hmm. Describe, there were nights when they were having to study by kerosene lamp mm-hmm. and share books because there was not a great deal of resources there. Mm-hmm. And this guy came here, studied physics. Now he's completed his PhD. He actually won a really cool award that enabled him to go to the Nobel Prizes. They have a youth mm-hmm. seminar, and to think of that trajectory that he went through, and he credits all of it to this physics teacher,
right?
In very difficult circumstances,
yes,
and learning that passion for physics, and so that touched me as well. So obviously, though, your story entails that you eventually came to the States. How did all that come about?
Yeah, my family moved to the States just like many people move to the States in search of a better life.
Mm.
We ended up in Michigan and then afterwards in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And they actually eventually moved back. And I continued here, studied. In fact, I studied accounting initially, but I just kept doing music. I actually did high school here in Illinois as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I got to ask, because I'm an Illinois kid. Where'd you go to high school?
Elmwood Park High School.
All right. Yeah. See, I'm here from Rock Island, but I knew some of those suburban schools up there.
Yeah, Elmwood Park is close to Oak Park,
yep.
For people who are familiar with Illinois.
Yeah.
Small town.
Yeah, yeah.
I graduated from there, went to the University of Illinois in Chicago, and studied accounting there. And then I kept, I stayed, I kept being very antsy until I went back and studied music eventually and continued that trajectory.
It's good to be antsy, yes. Right? I mean, that's what our forebears did when they moved around, right?
Exactly.
We're going to talk about, in a little bit, we're going to talk about how you've kind of tapped into that energy of the immigrant experience, right?
Yes.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. We've got plenty of time, but I just want to remind our listeners, because they're listening to you more than me, my guest this week is Wanis Zarour, who is a Palestinian-American jazz and makam artist and creator. And he's here right now thanks to Quad City Arts Visiting Artists. And we want you to know, friends, you can hear Wanis and this amazing group that we're going to also hear in just a few minutes. But just to get you primed, they're appearing tonight at the Speakeasy in downtown Rock Island, 7 p.m. Now, listen, they want you to get your tickets in advance because the Speakeasy is a great venue, but it's not very large. So please go to quadcityarts.com, friends, and get your tickets now to hear Wanis Zarour and East Loop. More on that in a moment. First, we're going to learn about a composer who's switched from composing to decomposing. It's a terrible joke, but this is the Composer's Date Book right here on WVIK.
This is the Composer's Date Book for April 20th. I'm John Burge. On today's date in 1862, an 18-year-old Russian named Nikolai Andreevich Rimsky-Korsakov graduated as midshipman from the Russian Naval Academy and prepared for a 2-year training cruise around the world. Nikolai's uncle was an admiral and a close friend of the Tsar. And in his autobiography, Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov admits he too at first thought it might be a good idea. He loved reading travel books, after all. But then Rimsky-Korsakov was seduced by music. He'd made the acquaintance of the eminent Russian composers of his day, lost interest in the naval career, and dreamed of composing music himself. The young midshipman's tour of duty did enable him to hear a lot of music and to sample opera performances in London and New York. But what made the biggest impression on the budding composer was the sky below the equator. "Wonderful days and nights," he wrote. "The marvelous dark azure of the day would be replaced by a fantastic phosphorescent night. The tropical night sky over the ocean is the most amazing thing in the world." It's perhaps not too fanciful to believe that such impressions helped Rimsky-Korsakov develop into one of the most inventive and masterful painters of symphonic colors and instrumental effects. Composer's Datebook is produced by APM, American Public Media, in collaboration with the American Composers Forum, reminding you that all music was once new.
Support for Composer's Datebook here on WVIK comes from the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, where access meets inspiration. The QCSO seeks to inspire, entertain, and engage the entire Quad Cities community through music, music education, and cultural leadership. You can learn more at qcso.org. And friends, there's just too much to do today in the Quad City. So after you get done listening to this conversation with Wanis Zarour at 2 o'clock, remember the Genesius Guild is presenting a Shakespeare, a nice little celebration at the Hawberg Mansion in Rock Island. That's free. Pop by and you're going to enjoy it. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, my guest, Wanis Zarour, will be joined by some friends for a concert performance at the Speakeasy in downtown Rock Island. Please go to quadcityarts.com to get full information. But that, Wanis, is a great time for us to start talking about East Loop. Tell us about this project that you're part of.
Sounds great.
Oh, I'm sorry. We got to get you on the mic. Please.
Here we go. So East Loop is kind of my, I guess, brainchild. It's the project, one of the projects that I'm really most passionate about. Because it kind of represents me as a person. I am a, as a person who's both a Palestinian mm-hmm. and an American, mm-hmm. I feel an affinity for both, you know, Arabic music and American music. And jazz is a very important part of, you know, the American experience and Black American music in general. So I've always had a passion for both of these traditions, and I always think in both of these kind of worlds at the same time. So it kind of comes natural to me. So the East Loop happens to be a project that brings Macomb tradition into a jazz framework. So we take all of the different aesthetics of Macomb and all of these intonations and all of these kind of melodic ideas and compositions into a jazz arrangement. And, you know, East Loop is essentially a jazz septet, except for me. I'm the only kind of Middle Eastern instrument player. But we have a wonderful trombone player, Katie Hickey, who's actually been part of the Quad Cities residency a long time ago. Brian Pardo on saxophone and clarinet. We have guitarist Sam Mushing, bassist Vinnie Cabot, drummer Nick Cabot. We have a sibling.
Great dynamic there.
Yeah, sibling rhythm section. And Andrew Lawrence on piano, who's a truly amazing pianist. So
how did you guys all get together? Because I know you're affiliated with the University of Chicago.
Yes.
We didn't even get to that part, so maybe we should tell that. And then how did you guys get together?
You know, it's Chicago, as big a city as it is, the music community there is not that large, and we all know each other.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a lot of it is like, you know, Sam, the guitarist, knew Andrew Lawrence and have worked a long time with him, and he told me he would be great for this. Brian, I've worked with Brian for a very long time in the Middle East Music Ensemble, which is the orchestra that I direct at the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
And Nick and Vinny were also recommended to me, and what a great recommendation. Yeah, so we all kind of, you know, we all dance around the same circles. We all see each other's shows, and that's how we kind of put it together.
For years, the jazz program at Augustana would have something that was not ever really too well known by the administration, but they'd head up to the Velvet Lounge and just have some great concerts. And
yes.
But probably best of the administration didn't know everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. How did you become affiliated with the University of Chicago?
Well, the University of Chicago has had a Middle East music ensemble for a very long time, since 1997.
Yeah.
And I started directing that orchestra in 2010. I used to play in the orchestra.
Did you really? Wow.
Yes. And then I became the director in 2010. And ever since, I've been directing this wonderful group of musicians. It is a large orchestra. It's about the next concert in May in Chicago will have about 75 musicians on stage.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And in that situation, we actually take Arabic music and we put it in an orchestral framework. And we use harmony and we use all of these kind of orchestral language while maintaining the integrity and authenticity of the music itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the orchestra, in fact, is not students. It's actually members of the community in Chicago.
Sure.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. But I don't want to get too far away from East Loop. So you guys have done some recording, right? And well, tell us about the genesis of the group and its trajectory leading up to this great residency in the Quad Cities.
Sure. So I started basically writing music as I've been imagining it, which had the elements of jazz and Macomb together. Mm-hmm. The group kind of taken shape. We've done some recordings in the past which are available online for you to see. And this will be our first full length album. So it's all original music, and it was recorded recently, and we're planning to hopefully release it in the summer.
Wow. Now, you have very kindly directed us to a little bit of a sample. We're not going to listen to the whole thing because we don't want to get into any copyright infringement or anything.
Sure.
But tell us a little bit about the music that we'll hear and the instruments that we'll hear within that music.
Absolutely. So this track is called Festival. And Festival is a festive track. The rhythm in it, for those who are musically inclined, is an Iraqi rhythm, and it's a 10-beat rhythm, which is unusual in a lot of the kind of jazz tradition.
Sure.
And it's subdivided in a very interesting way. It's like 3-2-2-3. So it's like 1-2-3, 1-2-1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2-1-2, 1-2-1-2-3, right? So it's got this groove that's very odd.
Yeah.
I played the buzuk in it, which is the long-necked instrument that I mentioned to you.
Right.
The interesting part about this specific track is it explores that a quarter tone, which is kind of that microtonal.
Yeah.
So you'll hear it. I think you'll be able to hear it. And all of the instruments are able to play it in the group, except, of course, the piano, because, you know, that note doesn't exist, but the trombonist can play it. The clarinetist or the saxophonist, in this case, can play it. And it's kind of exploring how we can use harmony and, the rhythm section of a jazz group with a melody that sounds more Arabic traditional. And with an Iraqi rhythm called Georgina. So there's a lot there to explore with that tune.
And this was from, this recording was from an actual, I mean, you were just getting together, working together, right? And so we're going to hear a little bit about the musicians.
Yes, it's a live recording session in the studio. We don't do tracking. We all get in the studio, we cram in one room and just go for it.
Wow. Yeah. All right, friends. So buckle up. We get to hear Waniz Zarour and East Loop, or at least a little bit of a sample. And this is from a forthcoming recording, and it's a work called Festival. So stay tuned. Friends, if that has not whetted your appetite to go and hear Waniz Zarour and East Loop tonight at the Speakeasy, I don't know what could. That was extraordinary. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you, Kai. Thank you. You're so kind.
Well, but I was intrigued when you talked about, like, some instruments are better able to meet those demands than others. Like the saxophone is
right.
A little easier to get in there, right?
More instruments than you think, really.
Yeah.
Clarinets can do it. Flutes can do it.
That's just, it's so, and the fact that you guys just get together. So I'm thinking of a story, and I'm not a musicologist, but it may be apocryphal, but I heard that when Miles Davis was putting together Kind of Blue and So What and these kinds of things, he would often make up stuff to his fellow musicians and say, all right, we're going to do this in the Corinthian modality. Not having any idea, there is no such thing. And he says, so just here's what it's going to, and he'll give a little description and then go, because he was challenging them to kind of open up different neural pathways. Do you find that experience when you're working with, because it sounds just by the names that some of your collaborators here are maybe more Western North American rooted type thing.
Yes, yeah? The guitarist is actually Swiss.
Ah.
And but by the way, I should mention that featured on this track is a world class percussionist who added their tracking to this project. If you heard that jingly stuff, his name is Tariq Rantisi, Palestinian percussionist, one of the best percussionists that I've ever worked with. I've known him since we were kids. You know, the approach with this group is I kind of throw things at them and then explain later. So there is definitely that
right,
kind of
right.
And once they kind of get into it and start kind of internalizing what is happening, the explanation makes more sense. So, you know, one of the things also that's really interesting about this group and about kind of mixing jazz with this tradition is with jazz, when we improvise, we follow kind of a harmonic structure we call chord changes, right? And if we kind of flip the kind of that equation so that if I'm improvising, a lot of times the rhythm section, including the harmony, follows my solo. And they change their harmony based on where I'm going with the makam. So they are, they've gotten so familiar with that system that they know what to do based on what I'm doing. So it's kind of a, you know, the flip side of that equation.
Yeah. So I want to get into something a little bit deeper here. So there's something about certain types of music, and maybe this is entirely through my lens, but I don't think I'm unique. But certain music just kind of comes at me at a sort of a spiritual level, right? That I feel it more than I'm thinking about it. And I would put makam and many of the rhythms that you've described. The minute I hear it, I'm in a feeling.
Yes. Okay?
And I would say that's also true for me of blues. Well, and this is obviously a bias, but when I hear some of the choral music from my own ethnic tradition, right? And hitting some of those harmonies and chords. But then other music, I have to confess, doesn't do that as much. I appreciate it greatly because it's very, it might be cerebral, right? And I can think of some works of classical music that are in both categories. Some that I appreciate more that's cerebral, but then all of a sudden I'm listening to Beethoven's Sixth Symphony and it's all just feeling, you know? How do you, as a person who studies and teaches music, how do you account for that? Is it just the lenses? Are they cultural? Or is it something that's wired inherently in the music? Because I have to confess, a lot of jazz for me is too cerebral to be felt by me emotionally. Maybe that's my limitation.
So, you know, and there's in every tradition, there's, like you said, to your point, there's this and that as well. There's the brainy and the information that comes from the heart. What's interesting about the Arabic music tradition is, first of all, it's originally a vocal tradition. So all of these intonations and all of these kind of patterns that are used in Arabic music come from the human voice. It's a tradition based on the human voice. So that aspect makes it very intimate. And the vocabulary of it is so connected to the human voice that it becomes kind of really connected to our humanity in that way. Makam itself, because again, the way it works, each kind of mode that we use is connected with not one feel, it's not happy or sad. There are stuff that just kind of mixed feelings.
Yeah.
So, and we modulate a lot. We go from one mode to another. We travel, we brighten and we darken. And we expand and we collapse. So there's a lot of that dynamic that is not that has nothing to do with harmony. It just has to do with how the melody flows, right? And of course, there's definitely a brainy aspect of what we do with the East Loop, especially when you know there's definitely mathematics involved with how we do the rhythms and how we arrange things so we can create some polyrhythmic information and kind of make the groove kind of flourish and have color in it. So it's really kind of using mathematics and using kind of these mechanical exercises to create a groove and to create an arrangement that kind of has a feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I want to delve into that just a little bit more, and I'm coming right out of left field because I warned you, Wendy. This is like, sure, a conversation that you and I are sitting down on a plane, long flight, and we're getting to know each other.
Sounds good.
I think a lot about things. So there are some kinds of music that just shut down my brain because, mm-hmm, I just want to experience it this way. But I also realize that that's something that that fear does, right? And, mm-hmm, and I'm tempted to say that fear is anytime your brain shuts down. But then I remember there's music that I hear that kind of shuts my brain down, and it's a positive experience. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to chat with you about that whole notion between feeling and thinking and how that can be used positively, but also negatively. Because, you know, we live in this world, and you and I were talking a little bit off the microphone, that that there's a lot of scary stuff going on.
Yes.
And let's just stay domestic for a second in the, sure, United States, where there's like, I want to scare you so that you won't think and you'll do what I want you to do.
Right.
You know, and that's terribly oppressive. Right. And I just wonder, I mean, especially now, I mean, this is a great celebration of life and music, and well, music as a celebration of life. But I think people in this country are almost afraid to discuss anything from the Middle East, mm-hmm, because we have friends and loved ones who are whose families are being affected and whose fear is being activated. And what is, I mean, I'm getting it here. I'm going all over the map, but,
sure,
how do you deal with that, that dichotomy between fear and thinking, or feeling and thinking?
Right. That's a really good question. You know, again, if we talk musically,
yeah,
just musically, you know, sometimes it's very hard to navigate.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's, you know, you have to shut one down in order to do the other and kind of ignore, which is a very hard thing to do because we live in a very interesting time in humanity in general. You know, obviously what's happening in Palestine, where I'm from, mm-hmm, and in Gaza specifically, mm-hmm, is really heart-wrenching. And it makes making music much, much more tougher. Mm. Than you know, just normal times, but at the same time, there is a feeling amongst the many of us Palestinians,
mm-hmm,
that we have to fight fear with resilience,
ah,
and it's a very, very important aspect of our humanity, and preserving our, you know, culture and our, you know, our existence. So resilience kind of helps when we think that we want to be resilient. It helps us kind of say, okay, we have a role here. We want to bring something to the world. We want to show our humanity. We want to show who we are as people. The beauty of our music. The beauty of our tradition, our artistry. And that helps us kind of, you know, overcome the fear that we feel every day for our families, yeah, there, yeah, for our loved ones, and just kind of the existential fear that we're always kind of, especially in the past few months. We have a responsibility to be resilient in times like these. Yeah. And this applies to everybody. It's not really just to Palestinians. Anytime we go through hard times, as humans, resilience is what saves us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And music, I would say, is kind of a buoy that when we feel like we're being swamped by waves that we can't control, it's something we can hold on to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate all that you do to bring all of you to your music and your career. But I mean, for goodness sake, East Loop is only one aspect, mm-hmm, of it. Would you mind telling us a little bit about this immigrant orchestra?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Chicago Immigrant Orchestra. This is just a beautiful, beautiful project. And it, you know, I'll be honest with you, one of the most beautiful things about it is really tells the story of the American experience. It tells the American story in many ways, because, mm-hmm, all of us here are, you know, from everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has either been through the immigrant experience in the United States or their ancestors have.
Right.
Except for, obviously...
Sure, native people.
The native people.
Right.
And what this brings to the table is something very important that we should embrace and celebrate, because it brings color to life.
Mm.
And it makes this place called the United States a better place, because it has all of these different layers and different perspectives, not only in arts, just in general, right? And it makes us understand the world better, hopefully.
This is a point of frustration for me.
Right.
Because my hope for America is that we come back to that notion of e pluribus unum, from many, one.
Yes.
Because if you look at it through that lens, anything that I am today are things that my ancestors couldn't have dreamed of, because along the way, I've stolen from other cultures. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say stolen, but I've appreciated other cultures and I've learned things. And right. By learning through difference, it makes me better, and my kids will be much better than me, and my grandkids far more,
right,
because of that experience. I mean, it helps that, my parents lived in very monochromatic communities when they grew up, right? Very homogenous in other ways as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to grow up in this city of Rock Island, which was much more diverse, and my kids, even more so, and grandkids and so on and so forth. But on the flip side of that, now I'm coming, I don't guess I'm coming back to this fear, is it, if we listen to the voices that engender the fear, we don't want to be open to those experiences, the many, you know,
yes,
and learning from that. That's why I'm so excited by this project that you're working on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a collective.
Yeah.
Just like what my idea of what the United States is.
Yeah.
It's a collective. And this is a project that's that combines so many traditions, Kai, into one group.
Hmm.
We have both South Indian and North Indian musicians.
Mm-hmm.
We have Arabic musicians. We have the co-director of this group. I'm one of the co-directors, and the other co-director is Farid Haq, who is one of the most celebrated guitarists on this planet. And he's half Pakistani, half Chilean. And he just brings this wealth of information. You know, we collaborate with, we have a Mongolian throat singer in the group. We have a Chinese ruan player from Taiwan. And a Peruvian, an Afro-Peruvian percussionist, a West African percussionist, an Indian percussionist. it's a Nigerian singer who sings in Spanish and French and English and Nigerian and a Persian singer. I'm probably forgetting five or six people. I'm just so excited about this project. It's a true melting pot, and it's, you know, I don't take this term lightly, because it's a lot of work to get there. But the first experience with this group is, We started it, the city of Chicago started it during the pandemic, restarted it. It used to exist before, kind of in a different way, 20 years ago. And the city of Chicago restarted and told us, okay, we want to do this. And then the pandemic hit.
Yeah, right.
So we met for the first time less than 24 hours before we did this recording that we're about to listen to. And we all met for the very first time around then, and we just immediately hit it off.
Wow.
It was magic, as if we've known each other for decades.
Oh. Well, should we give it a listen?
Please, yeah.
Okay, so this, friends, is Invasion, and it's your composition,
yes,
correct?
Yes, it's my composition.
Performed by the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra. My guest is Juanita Rohr. We'll be right back, but first let's give a listen to Invasion and the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra.
Thank you.
friends, as tempting as it is for me to listen to that entire recording, I still want to have some time to talk with our guest, Manisa Rohr, about the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra. But friends, if you want to see the whole thing, it's available on YouTube, and you'll want to see it because the way they recorded it, it's very interesting and interesting venue. And so go to YouTube and look up Invasion Chicago Immigrant Orchestra, and you can see the whole thing. But again, Juanice, thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And you said that this was happening during COVID time, so you guys were all like, had to be far apart from each other.
We were each 30 feet apart from each other. This was in September 2020, so things were very fresh.
Yeah, and we still didn't know what to do exactly.
Didn't know what to do. This was recorded for the Chicago World Music Festival that they did virtually.
So cool. And that project is continuing. Now, is that the orchestra you were mentioning earlier that's got a May, or is that a different orchestra?
That's a different one.
Well, tell us about the May gig.
Sure. So May 19th, we are doing an Arabic concert at the University of Chicago. This is the University of Chicago Middle East Music Ensemble, which I direct. That's a large, large ensemble. That's about 75 musicians.
Yeah, that is just amazing when you said that.
Yeah, large choir.
Yeah.
The entire kind of setup, woodwinds, brass, strings, beautiful, beautiful community. It's very community-based.
Yeah.
Some University of Chicago students also participate in it.
And you perform right in Hyde Park.
Right in Hyde Park.
All right. But now to whet the appetite, friends, I want to tell you again, and I'll probably tell you again after that, that you have a chance to hear Juanice Rohr and East Loop tonight at 7 o'clock at the Speakeasy in Rock Island. But please first go to quadcityarts.com to pre-purchase your tickets because there's very limited capacity in this venue. And I hope that this is going to be a culmination or a celebration of what's been a fun visit for you. Do you do many residencies like this?
Not many. Not many, but this has been such a rewarding experience all week. I mean, we've visited so many schools, many, many, I've lost count, but it must have been 9 elementary schools.
Oh, yeah.
And just working with
those
kids.
Are the best audiences.
Wonderful.
Just isn't that great?
Yeah.
Now, I don't mean to be too, I've already been very personal. Do you have any kids?
I do.
Okay, so it's so great to share music with kids, though, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
And especially the elementary school age, because they absorb, even if it doesn't look like it, they absorb everything.
Yeah, and they don't know what they're supposed to like or not like, so they just like what they like.
Exactly. And you know, even from my experience, when people visited my school when I was a kid, I remember every single one
absolutely.
Of these. So I hope this was an impactful experience for them and they've learned something and have seen something new and these new instruments. And yeah, it was really special.
Well, it's been very special for me to have you here, but I don't want to let you go without seeing if there are some other things. So we can hear you in Chicago. We can hear you on YouTube. And then tonight, of course, at the Speakeasy, thanks to Quad City Arts, again, doing that. But what are some other projects you have? You mentioned that East Loop is coming out with a recording this summer?
Yes, this summer East Loop will have this new album. We're playing all fresh material this Saturday.
Are you really?
Yes. So nothing that's available out there except the one you just listened to today.
And we didn't get a chance to hear the whole thing, so it'll be quite new.
Yes. So we're playing all fresh material. That the record comes out in the summer. We have the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra is also coming out with an album this summer as well.
Get out. So that is still very active, even though you started in 2020, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We're very active in that group. We actually recorded an album earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the process of doing the final touches on the post-production, and we want to release that soon.
But that also underscores your work as a composer. Are these primarily your compositions?
With the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra?
Yes.
No. What we do with the Chicago Immigrant Orchestra is a combination of original compositions and things from different traditions.
Okay.
So we recorded a Haitian song, we recorded a bunch of Mongolian songs and everything really in between.
Well, that's really why I hope people will go to YouTube and watch the video so you can see the music being made. I don't know if it would be worth checking into, but I don't know that there's ever been Mongolian throat singing paired with oud. And I think that was an Indian guitarist, or maybe
that was Farid. That was Farid. Playing guitar with some sympathetic strings. We had an Indian
and he's
Vina
Pakistani
player,
so. Chilean.
Yes,
I mean, just come on. What, as my friend, great guy in this community named Bob Anaveras would say, what a great salsa.
No.
So anyway, I cut you off, but this is everybody coming together, right?
Yes.
I don't think, how could anybody have put together that combination? But go, friends, to YouTube, check it out. You will enjoy it. You'll enjoy seeing it happen live. I can't thank you enough for being with us. This has been just an absolute delight. My guest, as you've been hearing, is Vanessa Rohr, who's representing the East Loop Orchestra that you can hear tonight at 7 o'clock, so get over to QuadCityArts.com and get your tickets right now. And again, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Kai. It's been wonderful. I had a great time with you today.
Total joy for me. I really, really appreciate it. And friends, I once again want to thank my guest, Vanessa Rohr, and all the folks at Quad City Arts for making this possible. Invite you all to join us next week when we're going to learn something about First Tee Quad Cities. And if that whets your appetite, well, good, because you'll hear it right here on Quad Cities NPR, WVIK 90.3 FM and HD in Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM K240 DZ in Dubuque. Okay, folks, coming up in just a little bit, we'll be hearing from NPR in Washington on your public radio station, WVIK Rock Island. Enjoy and stay tuned. It's more to come.